I think that is true. We are years from now, when we are older, we're going to tell our kids about a season in life when there was no toilet paper. And that'll be pretty epic and awesome. You know, last week, Joe took us through a message on wisdom, learning what it means to be wise. And he did so because he was thinking about what it would take to actually get us through the year 2021 on the right foot. And then he said, well, in order to get through 2021 on the right foot, you need some wisdom. And I thought maybe we'd spend a few weeks, an extra couple weeks, talking about what we need to get through 2021 or start 21 on a great foot. So first of all, I'm going to say that you need some wisdom. Nah, second of all, I'm going to talk about the fact that you need a win, or what am I going to talk about is actually criticism, not a win. And thirdly, you need a word. So you need wisdom, you need criticism, and you need a little bit of a word, and that's what we're going to talk about for the next couple of weeks. So today, specifically, what I'd like to talk about with you this morning is criticism. Exactly how to handle it, and what to do about it. And, you know, we all get criticized, don't we, for various things. And criticism is not a bad thing. In fact, I would say to you that in order to get through 2021 and start off 2021 well, you need some criticism, and so do I. We all need to be told some things that we don't like from time to time. But it does raise a few questions that I'd actually like to talk about this morning. So first of all, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to just think about really quickly, if you could, this question. What areas of your life has God trusted you with in 2021? Sorry, let me rephrase that. What areas of responsibility has God given you in the year 2021? I want you to think about that. Everything that you are responsible for this upcoming year. What areas of leadership and responsibility has He given you? Just take 30 seconds and think about it for a second. Maybe you're an adult and God has called you to work hard to support yourself and have something to share with those in need. Or maybe suppose you're not quite in that place yet and God has called you to be a student in the season of life right now, and you're going to spend either a time at a post-secondary or secondary school. How do you know that you're doing good as a student? Or maybe God has called you into a season of life where you're married to somebody and He's given you responsibility that way. How do you know that you're rocking your own marriage? How do you know that you're doing a good job in your own marriage? Or suppose you're volunteering somewhere. Maybe you're a small group leader. You're leading a Bible study. You help with kids. You're sound tech, worship leader. How do you know if you're all right-if about it? And you know what, friends? Here's what I realized. Is if you and I started really brainstorming all the areas of responsibility that you and I have, what you and I would come to realize is that we all share common areas of responsibility that God has given us, haven't we? A lot of us work. A lot of us are married. A lot of us have kids. And we share, those are all responsibilities that we all are responsible for in some fashion. We have common responsibilities, but here's the thing. My guess is that we would have radically contrasting views about what it means when it comes to how we define success in those areas. So, for example, when someone criticizes you, the question that I want you to think about this morning is, how do you respond when you fail in the eyes of other people? You think about all those areas that God has given you. You think about the idea that we all have different ways of defining the win in those areas. And we all think about the fact that people will speak into those areas, either a good way, affirming way, or a criticizing way. And how do you respond when you're failing in those areas in the eyes of other people? There's just a really, really quick example of this. About a few years ago for Liz's 33rd birthday, I thought it would go all out. I'm really bad with birthdays. I'm awful with them. And in my family, God knew that, so we put all the birthdays that I am responsible for remembering within 2 weeks of each other. So it's like Christmas. It just goes, I'm all hard and all expensive, and just go hard and it's all done. And then I don't have to remember it for the rest of the year. But this year I was going to do an amazing job of Liz's birthday. So I thought, what is Liz like? Well, you know, in Winnipeg there's this place called Thermia. It's like this Nordic spa, and she really likes going. So he said, you know what? Liz hasn't been with her girlfriends in a while, and she hasn't been in the spa in a while. I'm going to pay for her and her friends to go for a day at the spa, which was really, really, really expensive. So, and I thought because it was really expensive, I was going to win her birthday, right? And so I took her friends. She had a good time. She came back later that day and said, and I was like, how good was it? Did I rock it? Was it a good birthday? She's like, yeah, it was all right. And right away, I started getting angry because I spent just a lot of money. All right! What do you mean, all right? She's like, well, I love spending it with my friends, but I just wanted to spend it with you. I'm like, aw. And everyone says, aw. And I realized right then and there that Liz's definition of a good birthday and my definition of a good birthday were two different things. And I didn't really do a good job. And that's probably what I want to say this morning is, you see, we all hold common responsibilities from the Lord, but we all have different ways of measuring how well we are doing in it. And so when we fail in the eyes of other people, it becomes really hard to measure the validity of the criticism, doesn't it? Right? How do you know which criticisms you should... You should let speak into your heart and what criticisms you should let wash over you? It's a very tricky question, right? Because everyone has a different definition of what it means to win in that area. What it means to have a good marriage, what it means to raise your kids right, what it means to do this, and all that kind of thing. And because we don't know whose standard of success we should hear to, we don't even know what criticisms we should listen to and which ones don't. And so that becomes a problem, because some of us, we take the absence of criticism as success. So if anyone complains whatsoever about something in our lives, we think we did it wrong, and therefore we have to appease them. And so we're always trying to people please all the people that are criticized. Sometimes, though, the criticism is valid and we don't listen to it, and then we pay a price for it. So this morning, I really want to talk about the idea of, like, how do you fail in the eyes of other people? How do you discern in your heart which criticisms you should listen to and which ones you shouldn't? Okay? Which ones do you own? Which ones do you wash away? Our passage today hopefully will answer this, because that's exactly what's happening in the passage that we're about to read this morning. It comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 4, if you'd like to turn there. Our passage this morning, I need to set this up a little bit, is we're walking into the middle of a fight. Have you ever done that? You walked into a room, in your family room, and maybe you're just kind of going in the fridge, and your parents are just really going at it and fighting, or maybe the siblings are fighting, and you're just kind of walking in. You're walking in to the middle of a war zone. That's exactly the kind of thing that is happening in our passage this morning. This passage today really deals with how a church feels about its leader. Now, I didn't pick the passage. Don't read into the fact that I picked the passage or anything. It's just a really good passage for the issue this morning. Our story starts off with a guy named Paul. You all know Paul. I'm sure you do. Paul is a missionary called by God to travel around the world and tell people who aren't Jewish about Jesus. We all read about that last year when we did a series on Acts, how God called Paul and God said, hey, I need you to go tell a bunch of people around the Roman Empire and all around the world about me. And that's what your job is, go and do it. And he's like, okay, I'll go and do it. So that's exactly what he does. He goes to this city and that city and that city, and he tells people about Jesus, and he plants a church in one of the churches, and they become Christians, and he established leaders, and he moves on and does it again in another city. One of those cities, or church plants, is in the city of Corinth. Okay? He spends a bit of time there, he establishes some leadership, and then he moves on to the next city like he normally does. And what's happening, to set up the text right now, is that some time has passed, he's moved on, there's been a few years, and the church is going through significant leadership issues. You see, after he left, other leaders rose that were more talented and they were better communicators than Paul. Okay? One of those guys was a guy named Apollos. Okay? And Apollos was an eloquent, talented speaker in the days of the early church. He had charisma. The Bible says is that when Apollos spoke, when he spoke the gospel and he preached the gospel, nobody could match his way of articulating the gospel or his passion. So this would probably be, I don't know, pick your favorite Bible preacher that you love, and this would be the first century equivalent of. That's who Apollos was. Paul, on the other hand, was nowhere near the talent level. In fact, if you read more in 2 Corinthians, this is what the church thought about him. It says this, Paul's letters are weighty and forceful. His physical appearance is unimpressive. And his speaking sucks, or it should say, of no account. Right? So here you have Paul and Apollos, two leaders in the church. One shares the gospel, establishes the church. The other comes along, grows the church. And the one that is more talented, the one that everyone enjoys listening to, the everyone that's just more gifted, is this guy right here. Better speaker, more charismatic, has the gift of leadership. Everyone enjoys listening to him. Good jokes and sermons, you know, whatever. The whole nine yards. He's just really good. And so what the church is doing is they're comparing Paul and Apollos. And what they're saying is interesting. They're saying two things about Paul. Here's what's happening. Let me read this. The very people that became Christians through Paul's ministry are not only saying that he's a bad pastor because he's not gifted. They are saying that because he's not as talented, he's actually not a legitimate pastor. You hear that? And so what you're reading in the first four chapters of Corinthians is you're actually reading Paul's defense of why he's a valid leader in the church. He's a valid apostle, okay? And I believe, here's why I'm bringing this out this morning, I believe Paul's method of handling failure in the eyes of other people actually holds wisdom for us today. He is failing in the eyes of the Corinthian church. He is not a good leader in the Corinthian church. The Corinthian church doesn't like him. They don't think he's valid, which is kind of ironic given the fact that came through faith through him. They're dealing with a lot. He's dealing with people thinking he's failing in ministry. So I want you to hear what he says in his own defense about this. This comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, or 4, verses 1 to 7. It says this, "This is how one should regard us," this is Paul talking, "as servants and stewards of the mysteries of God." I want you to circle servants and stewards and mysteries, if you could. "More, however, it is required of students that they be found faithful. But with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself, for I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am thereby not acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the appointed time, before the Lord comes, for he will bring to light things that are now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive his commendation from a God. I have applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn for us not to go beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against the other." You see what's happening in the Corinthian church is they are playing celebrity pastor. Who's your favorite pastor? "For who sees anything different in you? What did you have that you did not receive? If you then received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? Already you have all that you want. Already you have become rich. Without us you have become kings. And that you would do it, you would reign so that we might share with you the rule," 1 Corinthians 4:8. So this is Paul's response to this. And I want to say a couple things right out the start about this, is that what Paul does is that he looks at the criticism that he is being that is being leveled against him, A, that he's a bad speaker, B, that he's suffering, B, that he's not as charismatic as Apollos. And this is what he says in response to it. He says, I don't really care that I'm not a good speaker because that's not my job. Paul defines success as being faithful to what God has told him to do. And in particularly, he talks about the idea of being a servant. Okay? What does it mean to be a servant? Well, to be a servant actually means to be middle management. It says that you are not in charge, that is, you're the one not calling shots, that someone else has given you a job, and you are the one responsible for carrying it out. That's why he says, this is how people should view us, as servants of the Most High God, entrusted with the mysteries of God, and one should be found faithful. What he's saying there is God has given me a job to do. He's entrusted me with a mystery. What is that mystery? That mystery is the gospel. And my job is to actually share the gospel. In other words, Paul's response to the criticism is it doesn't wash because it's not being faithful to what I'm doing. Okay? Paul was trusted with the gospel, and his job is to actually tell people about the gospel of Jesus. That was what it says in Acts chapter 9, verse 15. God himself says this about Paul. He says, go, for he is my chosen instrument. He will bear my name before the Gentiles and kings, and I will show him how much he must suffer for his name. One of the things that the Corinthian church railed against Paul was his fact that he suffered. Okay. Later on in probably 2 Corinthians, that's the other thing that they bring up against him, is that Paul actually spends a significant amount of time compared to the other apostles at this point in his life suffering for Jesus. And their argument is that because he suffers, he's not a valid apostle. Because this is good news, and because you believe the good news, you shouldn't suffer. And because Paul suffered, they did it. But that's exactly the opposite thing that we learn from God himself about Paul. God says about Paul, his job is to preach the gospel, to go and plant churches, and to actually suffer for my name. So what you actually find out about the Corinthian church is their criticism is actually something that God actually calls or says this is going to happen to them. And Paul's response is actually to say that my calling in life is not to be good as Apollos. My calling in life is to spread the good news of Jesus and suffer for it. In other words, Paul responds by dealing with the criticism by asking if it's faithful to what he's told to do. And I think that holds true for us today. When you and I are confronted with failing in the eyes of others, the best place to start is to ask ourselves, are we being faithful to what God has told us to do? Then and only then do you start, is that the starting point to discern if you should listen to people's criticisms or not? If they say you're failing because they think things should be a certain way when God has called you to do something else, it's not a valid criticism. But maybe on the other hand, they say you're failing because you're actually not being faithful to what God has called. The most important opinion on your success is the person who gave you the job in the first place. We all know that, right? You all take a job. You all work for other people. You all have bosses. And you have coworkers, and you work with coworkers, and your boss comes and tells you to do a certain job and to do it a certain way, and your coworker says, well, actually, you know, you could do it this way, A, B, C, D, and E. And you're like, okay, and so you do it, A, B, C, and D, and E, and your boss comes and says, you didn't do what I told you to do. It's your boss that defines the win, and in our case, your boss is God. I remember very particular when James was just born, we were dealing with this issue in our lives. I don't know if you've ever, if you haven't had a baby recently, maybe you would or would not know this, but when we worked into, when we walked into the prenatal place, or not the prenatal, the children's hospital, and we went to the baby wing where they had all the babies, there were poster after poster after poster after poster that would tell you that naturally breastfeeding your baby is the best way and that you don't need a formula, which I guess is true. But what wound up happening with us in particular is we felt shamed for formula feeding James. Because in our lives, we have a bunch of friends that are all natural and all hippies and, you know, vegan and the whole nine yards. And so when they heard that we were formula feeding James, they really came down hard on us. Well, you're not doing it right. You're not raising your kids right. It's not natural. Those things have chemicals. Of course they have chemicals. We know that. But at the time, we were told, listen, the medication that Liz takes for her seizures goes through the milk and into James and harms James. Therefore, you need formula. But all the criticism we were receiving was because people defined the wind differently than we were told to. You see what I'm saying? How you define the wind or the criticisms you should listen to and the criticisms that he shouldn't is whether you're being faithful to what God has told you to do. What does it mean to be faithful? Simply this, is that you follow through with the promises or tasks that you said you would do or you were given. That's all that it is. He has trusted you with the mystery of the gospel. He has trusted you with his with your place of employment. He has trusted you with your children. Those are his kids, not your kids. He has trusted you with ministry. He has trusted you with leading worship or Sunday school or women's ministry or men's ministry. Being good in an area that God gave you means that you carry out the wishes God has asked you in that particular area. And that's how you define how you're failing, what to do when you fail in the eyes of other people or not. The criticism you should listen to or not. That's a radically different definition of success than most people have. Success is doing what God has asked you to do, nothing more and nothing less. In fact, doing more is actually unfaithful too. If you looked at the story of King Saul, we all know what happens in the story right before the throne is whipped away from him, right? Samuel tells him, listen, here's what God says. You need to camp out, you need to wait 3 days, and I will come and do the sacrifice. Well, 3 days come, and Samuel's not there, and then Saul, what does he do? Waits a couple more days and says, you know what, I'm going to do it myself. He goes above and beyond what was asked, and he was not proved faithful to that, and because of that, the kingdom was torn away from him. Faithfulness is doing what God has asked you to do. And you know what? That should be a sense of huge release for someone, for some of us, because all of a sudden that means that my kids don't need to be busy all the time. It means that I'm okay if I don't get the promotion. It means I'm okay if their season is in my marriage where it's not perfect. And for others of us, it actually might be convicting this morning because we know that God has asked us to do certain things in their areas that we have not been doing. We judge success by faithfulness. So how do we do that? I'm going to end with asking 4 questions. How do we stay faithful? Number 1, who is in charge? Who is in charge? Who gave you the job? Verse 1, listen to this. This comes from verse 1. He says, this is how one should regard us, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. Paul got his job from God. He defines the wind by God. Faithfulness requires that we remember that it is God who gave us the job, and therefore God is the one who defines whether or not we did a good job or not, not the people around us. Number 2, are we doing the job that God gave us? What did he tell you to do, and are you doing it? Am I comparing it? Verse 3, I care very little if I am judged by you or any other human court, and indeed I do not judge myself. NLT translation of that verse, as for me, it makes very little matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or any other human authority. I don't even trust my own judgment on this point. He's not comparing his ministry to Paul. He's just doing that. Faithfulness requires that we stop comparing ourselves to others, because when we compare ourselves to other families, we're defining what God has called us to do versus what God has called someone else to do. We define the wind differently. I'm really sick of people comparing each other to each other. My time between Bible college and becoming a youth pastor, I worked a normal job at a normal office, and I would have normal Christmas parties with normal Christian businessmen, well, not Christian men, but businessmen. And it was always interesting, because what they would do is they would throw around their wives and parade their wives around the Christmas dinner table as trophies, right? So they would ask their wives, and I know this because some of them actually admitted they did this to me. They would ask their wives, hey, why don't you wear this dress or this dress? Because so-and-so is going to be at the table, and I hate so-and-so, and his wife is overweight, and you're hot, so I just want to tell him that I'm winning. I'm going to parade you around and compare you, see how awesome I am compared to you. I've seen guys do that with their wives. I've seen guys do that with their families and their kids. I've seen churches do it, comparing wins and how successful ministries are versus other ministries because they're more emotional, or they're more, they have a better kids ministry, or they have this, or they have that. And these aren't, we compare ourselves. And when we compare ourselves to other people and what God has called other people to do, we lose track of what God has asked us to do. Are you doing the job that God has called you to do, or are you comparing yourself to other people? Thirdly, am I willing to be wrong? Verse 4, it says this, for I am not aware of anything against myself, but that doesn't mean that I am thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. In other words, Paul is saying this, listen, what you're saying doesn't hold weight with me. It doesn't hold water over me. I don't think I need to own it. But because I don't think it's true, doesn't mean it is true. Maybe you're right. And he's allowing, what he's doing here is he's allowing a little bit of humility in. He's allowing a little bit of humility in. Are you willing to be corrected? Paul continues by stating, hey, I'm not going to own this. I'm not going to let you tell me that I'm a failure, because to the best of my knowledge, I'm doing the best job I can. But then he says, that doesn't mean I'm totally right on this. God may reveal the motives of my heart that might show that it's not true. Being successful in responding to criticism requires a certain degree of humility. Is it in you? Success requires us to be faithful, to understand ownership, to understand that we don't compare, and it understands that we need to be humble people. In conclusion, friends, you see, everyone around us has a different definition of what it means to win at your marriage, what it means to win a ministry, at your career. But the truth of the matter is that we are robbed of the joy of work or ministry or marriage or even parenthood because we are trying to live up to the different definitions of success. We don't realize that it's killing us. It's killing our kids. It's killing our ministries. And it's killing our marriages. We have overachieving kids. We define parenting by having overachieving kids. We define our marriage by being happy. Or we define ministry by being amazing, that it fires in all cylinders. But this morning, God invites you back into encouraging, enjoying your responsibility by realizing that the only definition of success that matters is his. And for some of you, that should bring a huge sense of release over your lives, because you've been trying to appease everyone's standards but his. For others of us, God's definition could bring a sense of conviction Because in our hearts, we know that we've been doing everything but what God has asked us to do. But whether or not it brings a sense of release or conviction, God's definition of success is intended to bring life into your lives. And thereby the criticisms too. Because anytime you accept a criticism, it should always be in line with what God has asked you to do. Amen? Amen. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this morning. God, we know that you are going to give us lots of tasks and responsibilities in the coming year. And when we fall through with that, God, and when we start to engage in that, we are going to receive criticism. It's just a normal part of life. And in that, there are going to be criticisms that we should hear and criticisms that we should not hear. And God, we would just ask that you would give us the ability to discern which ones are the ones we should own and which ones are the ones that shouldn't. Because God, at the end of the day, we want to be faithful to what you have called us to do. And everybody said, amen.